talking to Mark Walters from Second Amendment Foundation. SAF.org is the website. Really stimulating conversation during the break. We're going to bring that right to the air now. Two things I want to talk about. First thing, you mentioned these cases. You mentioned the Supreme Court. Where are we with that? Is the Supreme Court going to hear one of these? Are they going to settle this? Are they going to really support the Bill of Rights here with this? What's your take on that?
They're going to have to. There's no other way around it.
Why do you say that?
Well, because we can't continue like this. You have the Heller decision in 08 that affirmed the individual right of firearms ownership and to have a firearm for personal protection. But that decision and the case dealt with Mr. Dick Heller and his ability to keep a gun at home in his residence in D.C. And Scalia didn't step outside those bounds. But he did say that we have a right. But he also said that that right was not unlimited without expanding on that. So the left has perverted the Heller decision over the years to say that Scalia said it's okay for gun control, and the left went crazy. And they're banning guns here, and Beto O'Rourke, hell yes, we want to take your guns and all this. And these people were running on actually taking Americans' property. And then you have the McDonald decision in 2010, 2 years later, subsequently, that and Justice Roberts, by the way, voted for both of these, voted in our favor in both of these cases, that wiped out the gun bans in Chicago. Now we're left with in limbo of what about concealed carry? What about outside the home? What about all of these questions? What about the, because you've got circuits that are split here. You've got some appellate courts that have struck down assault weapons bans. You've got the Fourth Circuit that upheld Maryland's, for example. So any of the usual suspects that want to ban firearms say it's constitutionally okay because look what the appellate court said in Maryland, and the Supreme Court refused to hear that case for whatever reason. So yes, the Supreme Court is going to have to step in. Now, Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch gave us an indication of how badly they're wanting to take care of this issue and get one of these cases up in front of the court in 2017 when the majority of the court, now you need four to hear a case, chose not to hear the Peruta case out of California, which dealt with concealed carry. I don't have time to go into too much of it, but it dealt with concealed carry and concealed carry outside a home and the processing that you had to go through to get permits and so forth. And when the Supreme Court refused to hear that case, Thomas and Gorsuch co-penned a scathing dissent that said this court has got to stop sidestepping the Second Amendment and tackle this issue once and for all. And with the majority that we have on the court now and with a second Trump term, who knows what the court is waiting for, but they're going to have to do this and have to decide. Now, there is a case in front of the Supreme Court right now, and that's New York State Pistol and Rifle Association versus New York that the Supreme Court heard. New York had a law in place that said, we don't care who you are. As long as you're a New York resident, you can't travel outside, go anywhere outside unless you go to these seven gun ranges with your firearm. And the New York State Pistol and Rifle Association said, you are not in a position morally or legally or constitutionally to tell me that I can't take my own property in my house in Florida with me. Who do you think you are? So they sued. The Supreme Court decided to hear the case, and the city of New York and the state of New York decided, uh-oh, we better change this law because they knew they were going to lose that at the Supreme Court. So they tried to argue, we changed the law, the case should be moot, you guys don't need to render a ruling. Well, the court didn't buy that argument. We're awaiting that ruling by June, and we absolutely suspect that there will be a victory. How big of a victory it will be scares the left to death because this does deal with carrying outside the home. So depending on how broad the court ruling is in our favor, is going to be huge, and we don't know how that's going to go. But doubtful.
I was going to ask you about sheriffs, but we're running out of time. But this is huge, this issue here. What is the position of the Second Amendment Foundation? I mean, should people be able to carry a gun in their pocket? Should they be able to open carry? What's your position?
The Second Amendment is my concealed carry permit, and we're finding that out now. 16 states have already instituted what's called constitutional carry, and that is, I don't need a permit from government. I don't need to get on my knees. I don't need to pay a state, a tax, a fine, a fee, get fingerprinted and all this to be able to carry my firearm if I'm a law-abiding citizen. And here's the end all to that. Criminals carry guns anyway. They don't care. Why shouldn't a law-abiding American be able to carry a firearm lawfully to defend themselves?
Great question.
Because people are going to carry. Criminals carry guns already.
Great question. Okay, let me get the sheriff question in here quickly. We've got about 3-4 minutes. Maine's Franklin County Sheriff, in response to the order by Janet Mills, a stay-at-home order, here's his direct quoted response on Facebook. "We will not be setting up a police state, period. The sheriff's office will not purposely go out and stop vehicles because they are on the road, or stop and ask why people are out and about. To do so puts our officers at risk. This is not Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia where you are asked for your papers." I thought, wow, this is the biggest story in the world right now. The sheriff is standing up to this. This is not Nazi Germany. Your response?
I will be talking about this story on my live program on Armed American Radio's Daily Defense today at 4 p.m. This story's got legs because it speaks volumes about where we are right now in America with people taking away our liberties. Let me say this quickly about sheriffs. In the break, we were talking about this. Some of the best radio, by the way, is the radio you never hear, and I'm glad we're able to get it out from the breaks. But the sheriff is the most powerful constitutionally and the oldest constitutionally elected office in the country. Most people don't realize that. The sheriff has tremendous power in his county, can tell the feds to get out. He is the law of the land in that county. However, he cannot violate your constitutional rights like Sheriff Villanueva was trying to do in California, saying, "I'm closing all gun stores because that's what I said." Your gun rights are protected by the Constitution. Even the AG in California told him that's against the law. And he was, because of a lawsuit by the Second Amendment Foundation, stopped dead in his tracks, and gun shops were forced to reopen again. So very powerful office. Statement from this sheriff here, from Sheriff Scott Nichols, is huge, and it speaks volumes. I will not allow my citizens' liberties to be stepped on. This guy's a stand-up guy, constitutional sheriff, peace officer, no doubt, and we want more like him across the country.
Wow. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org is the website. Mark, please come on again. We got more time. I could talk to you for quite a while. I think our audience
would like
to hear
you. Oh, anytime, guys. I love it. Yeah, I'm thrilled. So please reach out at any time. I'd love to come back.
Very good. There he goes. God bless you, Mark. Mark Walter, Second Amendment Foundation. They're on that wall. We need them on this wall.
Found a new friend. It's great.
Absolutely. Todd, are we lined up with Chuck? Okay, we got about I'm going to talk for about a minute and a half here, then we'll have Chuck. Kind of awkward the way the scheduling worked today, ladies and gentlemen, because we had to record Chuck Baldwin's interview. But Chuck Baldwin, of course, ran for president in 2008. He has been a very outspoken pastor and preacher, man of God, so to speak, about our liberty and the connection to the Bible and America and all this. This is a very important interview at this time. I think I was very moved by some of the things he said, and it was fun to have him on. So I hope that you enjoy it, and I'll listen too, because, you know, my perception of it may be different than
absolutely.
You know, when you're interviewing somebody, that's different than if you're listening to yourself interviewing somebody, or somebody else is listening, what have you. I hope you really enjoy it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it for live today, and then we'll see you tomorrow. But we got a lot of great guests this week. Please stay tuned. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. Please say your prayers. Be close. All of the above. We believe in you. We love you. And we hope the best for you. So anything you want to say, Kev? You got about 10 seconds.
Nope.
That was profound.
It was.
That was profound.
Deeply thought.
Yeah. God bless you, everybody. We will talk. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
God bless everybody.
Chuck Baldwin on the way. Thank you, Todd. Welcome back to the Power Hour. It's not every day you get to interview somebody that you voted for president, but I get that chance today. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you're excited about our next guest. Chuck Baldwin needs little introduction. I'll give you a little bit. He's been a pastor for over 45 years, or will be 45 years come this summer. That's amazing. He's done quite a lot in his life, including running for president, as we mentioned. He's the head of a Liberty Fellowship in Montana, and he's quite a patriot, and we're very excited to have him on. Chuck Baldwin, welcome to the Power Hour.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Daniel. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I started, it was such a, you know, it's kind of a neat thing that I actually voted for you for president, and so I reflect back on that time, 2008, I believe, you ran for president. What was that like? What did you learn from that experience?
Boy, we could spend the whole time on that question, Daniel. I learned so much. I'll never do it again. But I'm really glad I did, because the experience was overwhelming, and the education of it was absolutely fantastic. You know, whenever people say we have free and fair elections in America, they truly don't know the system. And the fact is, we do not have free and fair elections in this country. The two major parties totally monopolize how the election process works, and it is guaranteed to be sure that only the two major parties are going to be thoroughly represented come November. And it doesn't matter what anyone else tries to do, even people that have, you know, millions of dollars like Ross Perot, who try to break into the political system, find that it is absolutely impossible to do so. It's a rigged system. You know, even in the primaries, you know, Bernie Sanders found out in 2016 how the Democrats rigged the election for Hillary. And, of course, Republicans like Ron Paul have also discovered the same thing, how that the favored candidate is, you know, going to have all of the opportunities afforded him, while an outsider like Ron Paul, outside of the establishment power structure, is going to have the primary deck stacked against him. And so, you know, and I was running as a third party candidate, so that makes it even worse. It is one of the most frustrating things when you realize that the media will not give you any kind of fair hearing, the ability to access people's hearts and minds with the message, not to mention appeals for funding, etc., is virtually unlimited. I mean, limited to the degree that it can't be done. And so whenever you try to think about the process itself, you, from the inside, for example, I had a CNN producer talk to my media lady at the time, and she said, you know, Mr. Baldwin has some great ideas. He knows how to express those ideas. He's interesting. We believe that people would really enjoy listening to him. But, you know, she said, but, you know, I was told not to have him on. Well, now, this is a producer. So, I mean, who told the producer not to have me on? Well, somebody obviously that's in a much higher position than she was. Same thing was told us by a Fox News producer.
Wow.
We had a Fox News producer. In fact, I knew this gentleman before I ran. He and I had met in various meetings, and we'd struck up a friendship. And he was very much like-minded with my philosophies and ideas. And he said, you know, it can't have you on. This is the kind of thing that third-party candidates run up against. The only mainstream TV talk show host that bucked the system and let me come on his program was Lou Dobbs.
Wow.
And he was with CNN at the time. And a few months after the interview I did with him, he was fired from CNN.
He sure was.
Of course, I'm sure there's no relationship. But the point is that people that really think, you know, they always say, well, I can't vote for third parties because they don't have a chance. Well, yeah, it's true they don't have a chance. But have you thought and asked yourself the question, why don't they have a chance? They don't have a chance because it's a rigged system. It's really, in my view, it's a communist system whereby the American people are led to believe they have a choice in who they vote for president, when in truth they don't have a choice at all.
It's like a president selected, not elected. Or Henry Ford, you know, you can get a Model T in whatever color you want as long as it's black. It's kind of like that deal.
A good analogy. Yes, that's exactly what it's like. And yet most American people don't even, they think that they're living in a Republican democracy. You know, they think that we have the power to decide who we're going to vote for. And they don't even realize things I just said, it's just like water on a duck's back. They don't believe it.
Well, do you, okay, you know, you ran, what, 12 years ago about or something like that?
Yeah, 2008.
We're in a totally different dynamic. Do you see people, because I don't think people trust corporate media, not near as much as they did then. They're, you know, I think that mess, what you just said, people may not shake their head at anymore. They may be listening to you. What's your perception?
Oh, well, that would be nice to think so.
Or am I delusional? Am I delusional, Pastor?
It would be nice to think so, but I tell you, it's maybe I can answer this way. You know, I think building up to the election of 2016, the independent, non-establishment mood of the country was at its peak. And that's one of the things that I believe caused Mr. Trump to be elected, was that he was perceived as being non-establishment. And a lot of people, of course, they were voting against Hillary. I think that was the number one reason they voted for him. But the second reason they voted for him was they thought he was non-establishment, that he was not controlled outside the power structure, et cetera. And so all of this frustration that they had felt for all these years, I think they felt like could be released with a good conscience vote for Donald Trump. So I think that was definitely a part of the philosophical version of the election in 2016.
Does that make you laugh when you say that out loud? Does that make you laugh inside to think that, Donald Trump?
I mean, you know me. You know what? So, yeah, it does. But I'm honest, so I think that was very much a legitimate part of the election thinking of the people at that time. But here's what's happened. Since you're asking me about up-to-date and if the mood of the people has changed, after Trump got elected, that movement, that mood, the preoccupation with a non-establishment candidate and independence and, you know, let's bring down the power establishment, it all coalesced in the Trump presidency. So for the last 3 years, it's been all about Donald Trump. It's truly not been about the Constitution. It's not been about the Declaration. It's not been about the Bill of Rights. It's not been about liberty. It's not been about independence. It's all these issues that we talked about from 2008 and onward, all the things that Ron Paul galvanized millions and millions of people around, that message of, you know, upholding the Constitution, the message of freedom, the message of principles over political parties, all those messages that were so much a part of our thinking for that decade, almost decade, it just disappeared. It all became about Donald Trump. So now then, I think probably there's less enthusiasm for a third party or for an independence movement or for a principled voting process.
Wow.
Trump has sucked it all into himself. So it's all about Donald Trump now.
Let me ask it this way. This is the same. I had this conversation with a friend of mine, and I'll ask you the same question I asked him. Do you think if Barack Obama was asking Americans to stay in their houses for a month and all businesses basically more or less shut down, do you think that conservative America would be taking this as lightly as they are now with Donald Trump doing it?
Oh, there's absolutely no way. In fact, I've said this in my columns and my syndicated column comes out every Thursday. It's free of charge, and if anybody goes to my website, they can sign up to receive it. and their email inbox. Again, absolutely no charge. I have mentioned this several times. In fact, the column that's going out tomorrow, I mentioned this again. I've said repeatedly that we lose far more freedoms whenever a Republican is in the White House than we do when a Democrat is in the White House. And it's not because the Republican presidents are worse than Democrats. That's not it at all. It's because the people that are the real resistance, which would be your conservative Christian, your conservative Republican, your constitutionalist, your libertarian-oriented individuals, whenever there is a Democrat in the White House, those people form a powerful resistance to whatever the egregious unconstitutional policies might be. I mean, we saw this when Obama was president, you know, in 2013 when they tried to get the so-called assault weapon ban passed. And they had a Republican House and a Democrat Senate. And, you know, they just knew that that was, you know, Sandy Hook, I think it was, one of those mass shootings.
Yeah, 2012,
Yeah, just taking place. And they were just very confident that they were going to be able to get that through both houses of Congress, and Obama was pushing it, and the Democrats were pushing it, you know. And I mean, they had a lot of momentum going. And, you know, just like what happened with the Parkland shooting, and Trump is president. So they were going to get this through. They just felt really good about it. Well, but the gun-owning people of this country, the conservatives, the you know, GOA group, and your freedomist groups of all stripes and sizes, they came out of the woodworks, man. I mean, they put so much pressure on Washington, D.C., that bill did not pass the Democrat Senate. Now, think about that. The Democrats owned the Senate in 2013, and they could not even pass an assault weapons ban in the Democrat-controlled Senate because of the American opposition, the grassroots opposition from the people. Okay? Now, you fast forward, and when you put a Republican in the White House, we saw this under G.W. Bush, those same people go to sleep. I mean, they're comatose. You know, the only thing they can think about is keeping the Republican in the White House. And if they do anything to upset the apple cart, they're afraid that the Democrat's going to seize the advantage and win the election next time. And so they are absolutely paralyzed when it comes to opposing egregious, draconian, unconstitutional policies.
I want to throw something out. I want to interject because the time's getting on us here. But I was at a meeting recently. Sheriff, I don't know if you know Sheriff Mack? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh yes, I know him well.
Okay, Sheriff Mack. So I meet with Sheriff Mack, and we're talking and making some plans and some things to do. Sheriff Vaughn in Virginia was actually trained by Sheriff Mack and connected to him, and they stood up about the Second Amendment. And people are going back and forth about who the enemy is, who's our enemy. It's kind of the same thing. Who, you know, Republican, Democrat, you know, it's left, right, what is it? And Sheriff Mack stood up and said one of the most profound things I've ever heard on this subject. He said, it doesn't matter who the enemy is. Our enemy is anybody who's violating the Bill of Rights. And it was just like, whoa. And why, you know, we're losing that ethic or that idea, that concept. America is not a geographic location. It's an idea. And the idea is the Declaration of Independence. The Bill of Rights is the fulfillment and the protection of that. What is your kind of feelings of those two things? And what are we seeing now? To me, it seems like they're being erased.
I think what we are seeing right now is the last days of freedom. Barring some kind of a divine intervention from heaven, we are living in the last days of freedom.
Ooh.
This so-called coronavirus pandemic, which is a complete exaggeration and nothing but mass manipulation by the mainstream media and even the medical community working in concert You know, I'm not saying that the virus is not real, and I'm not saying that people are not dying from the virus. But the idea that this is tantamount to a black plague pandemic is just absolutely nothing but fabrication and exaggeration. And in my column coming out this week, I quote a lot of doctors and medical professionals who are saying the same thing, and they're saying it even stronger than I am. This is an attack against the Republican form of government in America. This is attack against our Bill of Rights. It's an attack against our core freedoms. Everything that America stands for is under assault. I mean, stop and think about this. In the past 30 days, the American people have surrendered. I started to say they've lost, but they haven't lost them. They've surrendered them. They've lost the free exercise of religion. They've lost the freedom of to peaceably assemble. They've lost the freedom to travel, the freedom to work, the freedom to obtain a firearm in certain places like Pennsylvania. The right of autonomy over your own property, the right of autonomy over your own money. Go to your bank and try to withdraw a large sum of money today and see what happens. The right to buy and sell. This is just the tip of the iceberg. A county in Indiana a few days ago recently declared books, which includes, of course, the Bible, to be non-essential goods and outlawed the sale. Can you imagine?
Wow.
Books were banned from sale in this Indiana county.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Checkpoints. Yeah. The county at Kokomo is the county seat. Checkpoints are going up everywhere. State borders are being closed. National Guard troops are checking temperatures at airports. Local governments are setting up networks for citizens to rat out each other. Medical care is being rationed. People that have surgery scheduled are now, not scheduled. People that need MRIs and other kind of testing are being put off. They can't even get in to get their MRI tests. So these are people that need testing to take, to check the condition of whatever it is that, that's ailing them, and they need medical care, and they're not able to get it. It's being rationed. One of the things that they said about Hillary in 2016, if she got elected, was she would implement rationalized, medicine that's rationed. And that was one of the big accusations against her. Well, guess what? That's what's going on right now.
Yeah, what's different? We're talking to Chuck Baldwin. ChuckBaldwinLive.com is his website. Can you go about 5 minutes over here, Chuck?
Yeah, sure. I can go 5 minutes.
Okay. Let's, Todd, just get rid of the music. Let's just go straight through here with Pastor. Here's a quote, and this just floored me, and I got to read this to you. This is from yesterday's newspaper in Greene County, Missouri, which is a few hours away from me. Here's the police department, what they said. This is a straight quote from the representative there from the police chief. Quote, if people just comply and stay at home and don't put themselves in a position where they might be found in violation, there is absolutely nothing to fear from the police department. I'm like, my God, I guess we're Nazi Germany all over again, Pastor.
That's exactly right. The idea that the American people have inalienable rights. Inalienable means those are rights that cannot be taken from us. They are sacrosanct. They are preserved in our very foundational documents. That idea has been totally destroyed in 30 days. I mean, I grew up. My mom and dad were of the World War II generation, and I grew up listening to them and their friends talk about how could Germany allow themselves to be taken into totalitarianism like they did? How could it happen in Germany? And I would remember listening to their friends and talking about all that. And then inevitably, at the end of the discussion, they would say, thank God it can't happen in America.
Whoa.
When I went to college, you know, same thing. The discussions all over the place. Classrooms, dorm rooms, you know, in the cafeteria, everywhere. You know, how could that happen in Germany? You know, how could it happen? Well, thank God it can't happen in America. And all of my adult life, in coffee shops and conference centers and churches, well, how did it happen in Germany? Well, thank God it could never happen in America. I've heard that all my life. Well, you know what, Daniel? It is happening in America right now.
Well, you just said,
in front of our eyes.
What you just said is one of the most profound observations that I've heard to this point about the coronavirus. What you just said and how you related that and made it hit home. I'm really floored right now, to be honest with you. You're obviously a pastor, obviously well-known pastor. You have a non-501c3 fellowship. Non meaning no 501c3 fellowship for anybody interested. It can be done. Yes, it can. Chuck Baldwin. What would you say to people, you know, the obvious solution that you hear a lot from Christians? Well, America's just got to repent and return to God. And it's been said so many times that it almost loses its meaning. I don't even know what that means when people say that anymore. What do you say as Pastor Chuck Baldwin? What does America need?
Well, yeah, that is true, that statement. But I agree with you that the practical definition of that statement is absolutely ambiguous to the point of meaningless.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. What does that mean? Repent and turn to God. What does that mean? The average Christian that says that has no idea what it means. You know, what it means is we get back to biblical truth, natural law truth, which upon which our founding documents were created. Our Declaration, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights were founded on God's natural laws, the inalienable rights that we have been granted as a creation of God, that these rights and liberties are granted to us by our Creator. They're not given to us by government. The American experiment was the government of America would protect the freedoms and liberties granted to us by our Creator. That the government did not see itself as God, that the government did not believe it was the benefactor of rights to men, but rather it was the custodian of protection for the rights that God had granted us. That is all the foundation of American thought, and it's the foundation of the formers and framers of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, etc. And the patriot preachers of colonial America were well-versed in these principles of God-ordained natural law, and they taught it to their people. And their people, of course, inculcated that into society, and society inculcated it into their politicians, and that's just the way it was. But we have totally lost that understanding, Daniel. No. Go ahead.
No. Well, I was going to say, see, I think the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, you know, especially the second paragraph of the Declaration, we hold these truths, put that with the Bill of Rights. You can put that up, print it out, fold it up, and you can put it right in your Bible, because to me, that's where it belongs. I mean, that's how important and how sacred that is to me. What's
right.
Your perspective?
Oh, yeah, I have a package of messages on natural law, liberty, and government. And in one of the messages inside that package, is entitled The Bible and the Bill of Rights. And I go through our Bill of Rights, and I show from the scriptures that all of our Bill of Rights are taken directly from the Bible, that it is the biblical principles that established our Bill of Rights and that established our constitutional form of government, for that matter. And obviously the Declaration of Independence, which was the promise, like you said, and it was fulfilled in the Constitution and Bill of Rights. All of that comes straight from the scriptures. But see, the pastors are totally ignorant of that. They've not been taught it in seminary or Bible college. they haven't learned it on their own. They don't realize the connection between God's eternal freedom principles and America's values and ideals. They, to them, they're two separate things, and they don't see it as sacred. And so, therefore, you know, if we lose the freedom of speech, if we lose the freedom to travel, if we lose the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, et cetera, many Christians and preachers today don't see that as essential to Christian thought and ideology. There's a huge disconnect from our history and the understanding of our founding fathers relative to these issues and the understanding of preachers and churches today. They've just not been taught it. And this ignorance has created an apathy toward those particular truths. So obviously, if you have a generation of Christians and preachers, really the bulwark of freedom in any society rests with the Christian people and the preachers, the men of God in that society, when they don't even realize the spiritual significance and the sacredness of God's eternal truths relative to the things of liberty and freedom. That's a recipe for what's going on right now. And so that's why we're seeing right now, you know, Christians are being told, pastors are being told, you can't have a public service. You can't worship God freely in America anymore. You cannot congregate. You cannot come together as a people to exercise your freedom of religion in this country. And if you do, there's going to be trouble. And the preachers and the Christians are the first ones to say, oh yeah, we agree with that. Many of these churches close their doors voluntarily, even before civil government said you can't meet. They had already determined not to meet. They volunteered to close their services, and not only that, they ridicule, impugn, denigrate anyone who dares to say we have a fundamental, this is a fundamental sacred principle under God. And I receive so much hate mail and threats from Christian people over my position that it boggles the mind, Daniel. I can't even express, there's no words to express.
Now, what is that? That would send me over the edge. I mean, I would lose my religion almost, so to speak, about that. Why is it because they've been taught this from the seminaries? Is this the modern quote unquote Christian thought? What?
Yes, they've been taught it in the seminaries. They've been taught Romans 13 means that the state is God.
Yeah, well, that was Hitler's favorite scripture, by the way.
But exactly. Exactly. It's the same doctrine of two spheres that he taught. And they teach that, you know, we must submit to government. And there is no question of that. And then to throw in with the current situation, the fear factor, you know, that 24/7 on your cell phone, on your television, everywhere you go, it's coronavirus. How many people are dying? How many people are going to die? And it's 24/7 nonstop fear mongering by the powers that be. And unfortunately, we have, in my opinion, a generation of cowardly Christians who have had it on easy street their entire life. They've never had anything really that they've had to challenge in life. Everything's been, you know, about them, and it's about their well-being and about their safety and their happiness. It's all about them. And so now this comes along and, oh, you know, I might die, my family might die, and, you know, this is a plague, this is the plague of the 21st century, and so you put it all together and it's the perfect storm for tyranny. And that's what we are in. We are in the perfect storm of tyranny. And I'm telling you, if we don't have some kind of an awakening among the people, it's soon, we are seeing the death of freedom, not just in America, but around the world.
Well, it comes here. You know, our founders lifted the umbrella of freedom so high, it gave shade to the rest of the world. I mean, it all mm-hmm. starts and begins, so to speak, here. I'm going to say something maybe controversial, whatever. You probably would agree. I don't know. But, you know, they say 100,000 people are going to die of this virus, maybe 200,000. 200,000 Americans' lives are not worth as much as the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. That's what I'll say.
And that's what people don't understand. But, you know, it wasn't too long ago that our Christian and non-Christian freedom-loving Americans would often quote Benjamin Franklin. Franklin said, "Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety."
Bam, there you go.
And we would quote that often. You don't hear anybody quoting that now, because now it's all about safety. Liberty is subservient to safety. Let's say 100,000 people die of coronavirus, which I don't believe it. They can say it, but that doesn't mean it's true. They've got to understand that in my column going out tomorrow, I hope people will read it. I go into the medical side of this. You know, there's a lot of anybody that dies with the coronavirus is said to die from the coronavirus. And there's a huge difference in those two words. Every one of us who received a cold infection growing up, it's very possible that that cold infection was the coronavirus. The coronavirus cold infection has been with us, you know, for generations. So if any of us have received the coronavirus, the cold virus, as a kid or whenever, and we catch something, if we catch a flu or we catch something else, maybe we have a weakened immune system, maybe we have severe diabetes, we have hypertension, we have heart disease, any number of other things that have accumulated over the years, and we die. They do the postmortem testing. They find that the coronavirus is in our system, and it's been in our system since we had that cold virus back whenever we were 10 years old. They are required, the government has required them to list the cause of death as coronavirus or COVID-19.
We're talking go ahead, Pastor.
They may have died with the coronavirus in their system at one time because it's recorded as such through the test. But that doesn't mean it was the coronavirus that killed them. They died of something else. But that's not the way it's being listed. But think about this. Even if it was 100,000 people who died from the coronavirus, on any given year, around 50 to 80,000 people die, Americans, every year of the traditional flu. So if 100,000 people die of coronavirus, that's what that basically is. That's a bad flu year. It's a
well,
bad
what about
flu
cars?
Year.
Yeah, what about cars? We die from cars. Are we going to mandate
40,000 a year, every year?
Are we going to mandate that cars now drive 15 miles an hour and have a bubble around them?
Are we going to take away our right to travel?
Right, because of car wrecks.
We're doing. We're stripping the American people of our constitutional liberties, guaranteed in the Bill of Rights, over the issue that 100,000 people might die. Okay, but like you just said, and you're absolutely right. Freedom is more valuable than safety. And that has always been the American understanding. That has always been the American ideal. And now we have inverted that. In 30 days, we have completely changed to say safety is more valuable than liberty.
Well,
and it's not.
Let me read the last end of that quote from that police officer. Here's the last part of his quote I didn't even tell you. He says, "We are within our bounds," meaning to you know, arrest people and control. "We are within our bounds. How much freedom do you have if you no longer have life?" Yeah, and my God, I mean, Patrick, what would Patrick Henry say to this guy?
Yeah, give me liberty or give me death. Without liberty, there is no life.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's what people have forgotten. What kind of life do you have without liberty? Are you want? Does a slave have life? I mean, did everything about American ideology is all about freedom. Men have the whole idea about the Declaration. Men had life; they had fortunes. Most of the signers of the Declaration were wealthy men who had everything to lose financially, including their lives physically, and many of them did. They were willing to risk their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor for liberty. You know, how many times do we hear people talk about, let's say, World War II, Guadalcanal, and Corregidor, and Normandy, and Caen, and all these great battlefields of the war. And when you talk about them, what do people say? Those brave Americans fought for what? What did they fight for? Liberty. That's what we've heard. That's what we've read in our history books. That's what we were taught in school. That's what we've heard. You know, everywhere we go, they fought for liberty. When they fought in the jungles, in the swamps, whenever they fought in the mountains, when they fought around the world, what were they fighting for? They were fighting for liberty, 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 liberty. And they died. Many of them, hundreds of thousands of them, died fighting for liberty. Well, if safety is more important than liberty, then we should never put a man on the battlefield ever again.
Mm.
We should never put a person in harm. We should never have a fireman. Why would we have a fireman? He might risk his life trying to put that fire out. He might die putting that fire. We should never have a police officer. You know, we should never have anyone fly a supersonic jet fighter. You know, put on a battleship or aircraft carrier. We should never ask anyone to put their safety in harm's way, because life and safety is more important than liberty. Right? I mean, that's what that cop is saying, and that's what this whole thing, your safety, your life, and we're going to take away your liberty, but you're going to be, you know, my dad, World War II generation, his brothers, my uncles, all fought in World War II, the Marines and the Navy. My uncle was wounded in Guadalcanal. You know, I remember my dad saying to me when I was a little boy, and he would talk about the war, and he would talk about World War II and all that. And we had a parakeet in our house, and he would say to me, he said, "Son," he said, look at that bird." He said, "That bird is healthy, and he's singing and all that." He said, "And he's in a cage, and he's totally protected in the cage. You know, nothing's going to hurt him because he's in the cage." He said, "But son, do you notice one thing about that little bird? He's not free. He's in a cage, and he's safe, but he's not free." And he tried to drive home in my young mind the importance and the sanctity of liberty. And I'm telling you, that's what we've lost, man. We're losing our liberties because the American people do not value liberty anymore.
I don't know. I'm speechless. I mean, it's very profound what you just said. I had a grandfather, you know, not my father, but my grandfather was in World War II, and I can remember hearing things from him and his generation and that ethic and that morality and what America is. And America, who Chuck Baldwin is. Chuck Baldwin is America. And what he's saying, ChuckBaldwinLive.com is his website. He also has Liberty Fellowship there in Kalispell, non-501c3. It's an absolute pleasure talking to you, Pastor. I times like this, linking up to people who have your type of mind, your type of heart, it's encouraging, it's sobering, it's inspiring, hopefully, and I just wish you just all the best, and thank you so much for being on today.
Yeah, enjoyed it very much, Daniel, and the same to you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, just hang right there, Pastor. Everybody, God bless. We'll be right back. Thank you, Pastor, for being on.
On to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage, I love to eat. Yum!